There's a lot I don't know about the sexual differences between men and women. But one thing I do know, that once a month, a woman that I don't know seems to invade my body. And she's moody, and she's often very irrational.
This is Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. In today's program, Dr. Jack Crabtree and marriage and family therapist Christine Barber take a close look at how sexual differences are an important part of the marriage commitment. Although we live in a world that wants to erase the differences between men and women, our experience and the Bible seem to say that men and women are profoundly different from each other. But can one clearly define what is uniquely male and what is uniquely female? Let's listen to Jack and Christine.
You know, Jack, I was in a locker room a few days ago after I worked out, and I was listening to some women talking about men and women and the differences between them. And one woman piped up and very emphatically said, you know, if I had my choice, and if I have my choice the next time around, I am definitely going to choose to be a man. And when I was growing up, I really couldn't decide if I liked the idea of being a woman or not. And I think I grew up in my early 20s, really saw myself as more neuter than anything else. I preferred not to see the difference between men and women. But now, having been married for 20 years, I certainly like being a woman, and I certainly see the differences between men and women, or at least see that there are definitely differences between men and women.
Yeah, we live in a culture that is trying really hard to try to deny the differences and try to suggest that whatever differences exist between men and women are completely superficial. They're merely physiological. They're merely biological. But it doesn't extend to the psyche of men and women at all. That in terms of our the other aspects of our humanity, we are out of the same cookie cutter, and that there is no difference. It seems to me that that violates both biblical revelation, biblical teaching on the one hand, and just common sense. You know, the common experience of mankind is that intuitively we recognize that men and women are really profoundly different. They are not the same. We perceive life differently. We experience life differently. We think about our life differently. And that affects every aspect of our life. That difference colors and affects every aspect of our life.
And I think there's a lot of people out there, Jack, trying to describe exactly how men and women are different. There's a book that you and I talked about months ago. It's called, I think it's Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. It's quite a popular book. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have read that book. And he really works at trying to say, this is what men are like, and this is what women are like.
I've been really helped by something I've read by Karl Barth. Karl Barth was a German theologian of the early part of the century. And he wrote a massive volume called Church Dogmatics, and he has a whole section in Church Dogmatics on the Genesis account and men and women and the differences between men and women in marriage. And in there, he argues that it's impossible and, in fact, a mistake for us to even try to define the difference between men and women. On the one hand, he argues that the biblical text assumes that there is a difference. It takes it for granted that there's this profound and huge difference between men and women on the one hand, but on the other hand, it never attempts to analyze and articulate and describe that difference, and that any attempt that we do make to analyze that difference always ends up misrepresenting the difference. It always ends up distorting our understanding of the difference between men and women. And that would be my reaction, you know, to that book, for example, is that it's one more attempt to make simple what is really ultimately fairly profound and mysterious, the difference between men and women, and to try to articulate it and analyze it and make it, put it out there for everybody to see. But it always ends up not really describing real men and real women in the world. It always ends up being a grid that we look at men and women through rather than do justice to the reality of who we are.
Of the individuals that we are?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, of the individuals, but also, let me give you an example. You have kind of the standard comments that you might hear people make. men are rational, women are emotional. Men are analytical, women are intuitive. Men are objective, women are subjective. Those are not the categories that author used, but those are more on the street kinds of handy handles that people try to use to define the difference between men and women. The problem is that you and I can think of all kinds of counterexamples. Women that are much more analytic than most men that you know, or men that are far more intuitive than many women that you know. That you, anytime you try to come up with these categorizations to define the difference, you find all kinds of individuals who defy those categories. I think that's what Bart was getting at. I think Bart was trying to say, look, it's just not that simple. When all is said and done, our analysis and our language cannot adequately describe this profound difference that exists between men and women.
It seems to me, Jack, that our trend to try and define, like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, the differences between men and women, and really categorize those and really set those out so we can see some very, very distinct differences and have them defined for us, then I think it makes life, it makes marriage more doable. If I have this rule, all I have to do is obey it. If I see this pattern, all I have to do is fit into it. So it kind of makes life a lot easier, or I think that's its intent, is to make life much easier.
As a shortcut, you mean? Make it easier as a shortcut? Or are you saying in a beneficial kind of way?
Well, I don't think it ends up being beneficial.
Right, okay.
I think that it gives us the illusion that if I just understand this thing, and if I can just talk to my husband or my wife in this way, then I'm going to make my marriage work. And I think that that's really a misunderstanding of what marriage is about entirely. Because marriage is about trying to know and understand and see you. And that's a very difficult task. In fact, it's a lifelong task. If I come with a preconceived notion of who you are, who my husband is or who my wife is, I'm going to see them through those glasses. And inevitably, I'm going to miss seeing the unique individual that they are, and the response that they're going to have or the experience that they're going to have is, I'm not really being known. I'm not really being cared about. I'm not really being seen for who I am. They're not going to feel cherished in the way that they could feel cherished or valued if I really saw who they are.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly what I would say, is that the hard work of getting to know your partner in marriage, we, as basically lazy and self-centered people, we want to take shortcuts, and it's a mistake to take shortcuts. We really need to work at the process of getting to know our partner.
Jack, we've talked about working at the process of getting to know our partner in previous programs, but let's take a short break now and come back and talk some more about that.
Okay.
Here's something about Jack Crabtree. Years ago, he began to seriously study the Book of Romans. So what do you say? Lots of people study the Book of Romans. Well, the more Jack studied, the more he began to see a difference between what he had always believed Christianity to be all about and what the Book of Romans was telling him. The difference bothered him, and he had to get to the bottom of it. What emerged was a fresh and insightful understanding of the gospel, an understanding that changed his life. Over the years, Jack has taught in the Book of Romans, other books of the Bible, and numerous topics. In each case, he brings his desire to get to the bottom of it. He believes that it's worth our while to seek out truth, even if it's hard work. Christine Barber is a professional marriage and family therapist. Because she works closely with people who are suffering and struggling through life's toughest problems, she has to be committed to truth. This means being committed to her clients' best interest, to their growth as wise people, and to see real change in people's lives being the work of God. For her, the answers to life's big questions are rooted in the truth of God's Word. She sees this world as the arena where God grows us up into wise people who love the things of God and look forward to His kingdom. Now, here again are Jack and Christine.
Jack, in working with couples over the last several years, I found that most often people come into my office and they want me to give them an assignment of how to make their marriage better, to give them some rules, to give them some definition, to basically wave a magic wand over them and make their marriage work for them. It is inevitably a very difficult assignment that they have to take on in order to make their marriage better, in order to bring themselves up from the rubble that they're in. They want me to make it better, and I can't make it better apart from them really deciding to initiate the hard work of working on a marriage.
And getting to understand one another.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is the bottom line of my work with people. They're going to be in a power struggle over and over and over again, saying, you listen to me, or you do it my way, or you come over to my side. And each of them doing that, or one of them or the other of them alternately deciding to understand the other one and working really hard at that. Because what that does is it requires that one person just, while they're listening to one, puts their presuppositions on the bookshelf behind them. They put their fight, they put their ego, they put their selfishness, they put their desire to be on top on the shelf for a while, and it's a really difficult process to do that. I mean, certainly I don't just see it in my counseling office, but I see it with myself.
Mm-hmm. The assumption that has to be put aside in order to understand your partner is the one about what are these sexual differences. I mean, that's a huge one, a huge assumption. That's why I think it is so much more helpful to refuse to define the difference and to instead insist of one another that we come to understand the sexual difference by understanding my wife or my husband. That's how we're going to understand the difference. Get to know your wife and you'll get to know a woman and you'll get to know what it means to be a female. Get to know your husband and you'll begin to understand what it means to be a man. That's much better than the shortcut, which ends up distorting our perceptions of reality, that says, well, women are just like that, or men are just like that. Because that ends up being a grid that we look through, and is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If I'm looking through that lens, that's what my husband looks like to me, or that's what my wife looks like to me, and I really don't get to know them. Rather, I'm getting to know them in the light of a stereotype that I have bought into. And that, I just think that's a huge mistake. It really undermines the very project of marriage itself. Because as you've been suggesting, the project of marriage itself is to do the hard work, the long road of really getting to know my wife or my husband through life experience.
And we're making it sound like it's maybe just a hard road. It is a long road, and it is a hard road, but it is a very satisfying road.
Yes.
It's a very beneficial road. If I just do some prescribed behaviors, I may indeed be able to avoid over a long period of time conflict. I may be able to in some way get along on the surface with my mate and live in what seems to be a very peaceable marriage. On the other hand, when I'm doing the long, hard work of marriage, conflict is going to be inevitable, and that's the difficulty of the marriage.
Right.
And my selfishness is going to come up, and my pride and lots of having to die to myself is going to happen in the context of marriage. But when I do that, when I'm willing to enter into that work, I am entering into a relationship that is so much more substantive. It has so much more depth and breadth. I don't only experience the joy, but I also experience the pain. But in the other relationship, I think I don't experience either. I kind of walk along a thin, narrow band of getting along, so to speak, but not developing into a marriage that has true, good intimacy and companionship, where I'm feeling valued and valuing the other person.
It's the difference between really experiencing marriage, I think, as God intended it, and trying to manage my marriage to keep it from falling apart and self-destructing. Those are not the same thing.
And actually, if I manage my marriage, as you said, in order, by going by these prescriptive rules or presuppositions of who a man or a woman is, then I really don't end up with a marriage at all.
Right.
I end up with a roommate. I end up with somebody who I've gone through life with and maybe can say I was never divorced and have that as a feather in my cap. But I don't know if I could say I was ever really married either. You know, another thing I'm thinking of, when we look at these books about sexual differences, and there's prescribed rules or prescribed things that the man and woman should do based on their differences, I think what often happens, Jack, or what I see often happening, is the man or the woman saying, well, look, husband, or look, wife, read this book, this is who I am, and it becomes an excuse to being that way. For example, one of the things in the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, one of the things that it says is that men, when they come home from work, are going to be very tired, and they need to have a time to go into their cave, so to speak, into a different room to be alone and to kind of regroup after their difficult day. Now, I don't know if I'm quoting this exactly, but that's kind of the gist of what he says. I read it several months ago. And that the women just need to know that he needs to go into his cave and be left alone. Well, I've heard that that part of the book quoted or something like it many times in my counseling office, where men are actually using that as an excuse to not take on the responsibilities that they need to, and say, well, you know, that's just who men are, and I just have to have this, and so wife, you just have to put up with this. Read the book, that's the way it is.
Yeah, one of the problems with defining sexual differences from kind of our experience of one another and our experience with one another, one of the problems is that, and we as Christians ought to be the first to recognize this, is that my experience is a mixture of who I am as a male creature, a male human being, and who I am as a sinful rebel against God. I mean, both of those things are dictating my behavior and my response to life situations. There may very well be some patterns there. It may be that the way a male copes is in a distinctive kind of way, or at least generally speaking, to generalize, males tend to cope with the stress in their life in one way and women cope with it another way. And so a book like that may actually be seeing something that's really happening there in the world. The problem is it's written from the assumption that what we do is what we are is what is valid. And that, of course, and then ultimately what is good. And that, of course, is what we as Christians, from a biblical perspective, would challenge. No, not all that I do, kind of instinctively or automatically, is valid. Some of it is just plain evil and wrong. And I think that's what's behind what you're saying, is that we have to distinguish what part of it is from my sexuality as God created it and defined it and intended it, and what part of it is from my rebelliousness against what's good and right and true, and I need to work against it, not accommodate it and use that as a rationalization and excuse.
And I would say also, and what part of it, of what I do, comes from my environment and what I learned in my family?
Right, right.
Did I learn righteous behavior from my parents and from their example? Or did I learn through their example things that were wrong, things that I need to consider again, things that I need to question and perhaps work at changing in myself?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just generally true for us as Christians that whether it's the personal values that we inherited from our childhood and our upbringing and our family, whether it's the cultural values that we inherit from our culture, wherever we get our values, we always need to subject them to the light of reason in Scripture and ask ourselves the question, are these good things or are these bad things? Are these things that I need to embrace and celebrate, or are these things that I need to resist and to the extent that I can repent of, change my mind about, because they're wrong? They really are counterproductive to my pursuit of righteousness.
Jack, in the very beginning when we were talking, you said there are some very basic differences between men and women on a physiological level. And when I said earlier on that I really like being a woman now, I kind of lied there, because I don't like being a woman physiologically. I don't like what my body does. I don't like what it does in its monthly process, and I don't like where it's going as I head toward menopause. I'm bringing this up because there is very distinct difference in the way men and women's bodies work. And one of the ways that I know that I've been irresponsible in my difference as a female is to not work hard with the physiological changes that happen to me throughout the month. It becomes more and more obvious as I grow older that there's more differences. Sometimes that happens very early for women, and there's the whole PMS cycle. And one of the things that happens with premenstrual syndrome is that women tend to be pretty grumpy, pretty irritable. Lots of them talk about being irrational. I could say and have said, you know, it's my body, I'm feeling really bad, I just feel really grumpy today. And use that as an excuse to be grumpy. That's a really tough thing for women. The whole physiological change will come on us as though a different person entered our body. I've heard that a lot from women. And I become someone kind of different, both to myself and obviously to other people. We were explaining this whole process to my son several years ago, and his comment at the end of our discussion was, "Oh, so that's what's wrong with Mom."
Yeah, we do the same thing when we excuse our behavior because I'm overly tired or hungry or just not feeling good, feeling lousy. We tend to take the physiological effect on our mood and on our attitude and use that as a cause or reason for me being unkind and lacking in compassion and disrespectful to other people. And I think you're right. I don't care what physiological thing that we're talking about, whether it's related to my sexuality or just related to my finiteness and the physiology of humanity itself. It is not an excuse to be unkind and disrespectful.
But I want for a second to bring it back to the whole issue of the female physiology, if I can.
Okay.
And on one hand, as I said, I don't think that women should use that as an excuse. However, they, me, will have to work really hard not to do that, because it really is something to be reckoned with. And for some women, very little, if at all, and other women, a tremendous amount. And as we grow older, it seems that my friends, people who I've worked with, say it becomes a much more difficult thing. So we shouldn't use it as an excuse, but we should work with it. On the other hand, I think it's very important for men to understand this difference and to work in an understanding way with their wife in regard to this. For example, to know the time of their cycle, to understand the changes that are taking place, to be able to talk about it with their wife so that they're seeing it as a very real, tangible issue for the woman, something that shouldn't just be thrown off and said, well, you know, she's just PMSing. It isn't just PMSing. It's a real thing.
What's the difference? Can you define the difference between just PMSing and it being a real thing?
I think what I'm trying to get at there is she's just PMSing, it doesn't really matter, it's no big deal, let's just go on with life, as opposed to saying, like, if you fell down and broke your leg, I wouldn't say, well, he just broke his leg, but I'd respond to you differently. I'd be maybe more helpful to you. I might need to be a little bit more patient with you. I might need to adjust my behavior in some way because you have this broken leg. And because it happens frequently, it happens very frequently, once a month, I think that it wears on the patience of both of us, because here it is again, here's that problem again, but that's something that God gave us. And we have to, every month, with the change of cycle, work with that, both the woman and the man, and in their marriage together, make that part of the project of becoming one with each other, of loving each other through that very difficult physiological change.
Obviously, it's the effect of the physiology on what the psyche, the perceptions, the experience of life itself that really makes the big difference. Can you help us understand that? How do things change? What is going on that makes it particularly difficult for a woman?
Well, it's different for every woman, and so we could have 10 women on here, and they could speak from their own experience.
Okay.
But some generalizations that I could make is, I go from a place of feeling pretty okay, like life is life is fine. In fact, there's sometimes during the month where I look outside and everything looks sunshiny, even when the clouds are gray. Other times during the month, I'll look outside on a sunny day and it will look gray to me. It's just a strong sense of things not being okay. I have lost my sense of well-being, and I can chart it just pretty easily that it's going to happen on these days, and I have to say to myself, okay, it's one of those days that you don't feel good, but really, it's not raining outside. It really, there is sun, and it's gonna come out from behind the clouds in a few days. Another generalization that I could make is that women tend to go from a sense of being rational, of being reasonable, to being completely irrational, unreasonable, and that really works on their patience. It's very difficult to be patient when you can't see things rationally. It just looks like the fact that the banana peel got left on the counter is really, really a big deal. It really feels that way. And I experienced myself having to talk myself out of being very angry about the banana peel being left out when the day before it would have been easy for me to say, hey, Larry, you left the banana peel on the counter, or, you know, dealing with it in a very reasonable way. Again, it's like something almost enters my body and changes my perceptions, and I have to be aware of that and work with it, discipline myself to work with it. So those are some of the differences that are pretty common for women. And again, it really works on a continuum. Let's take a break and come back to looking at this one more time.
Here's a question. What does it mean to take the Bible seriously? Does it mean that you carry your Bible with you everywhere you go? Well, maybe. Does it mean that you read it every day? Could be. Does it mean that you believe what it teaches is true? Certainly. But how do you know what the Bible really teaches? The staff of the McKinsey Study Center believes that discovering what the biblical authors meant when they wrote the Bible is central to taking the Bible seriously. At the heart of McKinsey is a desire to let the text speak for itself, to understand the Bible the way its authors intended. They believe the truth contained in the Bible offers a radical message for our world. They also believe that studying the Bible is a lost art. However, at McKinsey, studying the Bible is not just an intellectual exercise. It's about learning to see this world and to see ourselves the way God does. It's about coming to terms with our sin and God's wonderful mercy. It's about truly having hope in this fallen world. If you're interested in knowing more, we would like to send you our tape catalog or our free monthly newsletter, News and Views. At the end of the program, we'll tell you how you can get in touch with us. But right now, here again are Jack and Christine.
So Jack, before the break, we talked about some real distinct physical or emotional changes that happen in a woman during her monthly cycle. The two big ones that I brought out were her mood and her rationality.
How would you counsel me as a husband to respond to my wife when she has an altered rationality, an altered mood? How do I best help her?
Well, if you really want to know how to best help me, I would like you to give me your body and I'll give you mine. And we can trade once a month. That would really be my most favorite thing to do. So I was talking about those women in the locker room, and she said, you know, next time I go around, I'd really like to be a man. And physiologically, I must say that it would be, I think, at least from what I've seen, a lot easier to be a man than it is to be a woman.
Well, but short of that.
Short of that? You mean you're not willing to do that for your wife? Larry has not agreed to do that for me either, and I think it's very selfish of him. Well, what to do? I think I've already said some of, I'll repeat myself, but I've already said some of it. Again, to say, well, that's just PMSing, is really belittling, is really minimizing.
Can I tell you what I think a man would mean if he says that?
Yes.
The part about when a woman seems to be overreacting, that from the man's perspective, it's an overreaction to, say, the banana peel on the counter, for example. And I think you've agreed that it looks huger than it really is. if I'm trying to take my wife's concerns and the problems of her life seriously, I think there's a tendency for me to look to when I say she's just at that time of the month. What I'm saying is, although she's describing her problems as if it's the end of the world to her, she doesn't really mean that. I mean, she doesn't really believe that. It's the way it looks to her right now. And so it's not demanding any more or a different kind of response on my part than it would at any other time of the month. It's just that it looms large to her, and I have to take that into account. I shouldn't take drastic steps to fix my environment and to step in and solve this problem any more than I would at any other time in the month. It doesn't mean that I don't believe that it looms larger to her. It's clear that it does. But I mustn't act on her perceptions. I must act on the in proportion to the real size of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I would mean by that. What is a problem to most husbands is to know, but it does look that large to her. How can I help her there? How can I help her?
Well, I think you've really gotten a big piece already, Jack, if you know it really does look big to her.
Okay.
If you don't say, try and talk her out of how big it is, because you're not going to talk her out of how big it is right then, because that's her perception that day. She might be able to say to herself, wow, I didn't respond like that yesterday, but I sure do feel that today. But I can't talk myself out of it. It just is. And so you're taking for granted something that I think most men don't know, or I would guess most men need to learn throughout their life, is that it really is that big to them.
But it's not comforting to a woman for the man to try to tell her that it's not as big as it looks to her.
Try it. Give it your best shot. Yeah, I think she would just no. I mean, emphatically no. Don't talk her out of it. Let her have that perception. And whatever discomfort you have with her thinking that banana peels are the end of the world, then, Jack, just live with your discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And let her be that way. And I think that's a big thing that men need to do in this time, is live with the discomfort that the world is different to her than it usually is, and that you have a different wife than you do other times during the month. And you just have to know that and expect that. Now, I'm not saying so women have the excuse to be jerks. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, though, that women do have a distorted perception during that time. Or some women, many women. A point that you were making is, should I change as the husband my behavior? Where you said, certainly I shouldn't change my behavior in response to her distorted perceptions. One thing that I think men could do is walk on eggshells. It probably would teach the woman to be irresponsible if he was willing to walk on eggshells that whole period of time.
You're saying the man should not walk on eggshells?
That's correct.
Okay.
He needs to act in a loving way, in a kind way, in a patient way, in an understanding way, but not try to just, out of his fear of her response, walk on eggshells so that she won't get mad at him. If he is doing things that are difficult for her, she, just like any other time of the month, needs to be willing to work at those things as best she can, and for the man to be able to work with her as best that he can. It will be more difficult.
She will have more energy behind her, some more urgency and energy behind her concern.
Far more.
Yeah.
Far more. I have found it really helpful for my husband to be willing to say, you know, it looks like you're really having a hard time. And not for him to say, come on, you're PMS and you're having a really hard time, or be condescending to me, but just to point out that he sees that it's really hard for me. And sometimes when he does that, I just want to go toward him and say, yeah, I'm just really having a hard time. I'm really grumpy, and will you give me a hug? He's offering this insight that he has about me and not telling me I'm wrong, not telling me I'm bad, just understanding that it's really hard for me, and that softens me. It draws me to him.
It seems to me that a husband, from my experience, oftentimes the problems that my wife might be confronting are a third person out there, something out there in our life, in our environment. It's not between the two of us. It's between her and something out there. Normally, I ought to take responsibility to do what I can to address the problem in a responsible, wise, and caring kind of way. I mean, if she has a problem, I need to help address it, help her address it, or I need to address it. The problem is that when, if the wife's perception is exaggerated, and it looms larger than it actually does, then if it were not an exaggerated perception, it would call on a response from me. If you understand what I'm saying, that this is important to her. I need to take steps to do something about it. I need to address it somehow. If it's not an exaggerated perception, probably the appropriate response is for my wife to forbear. Just, this is not a big deal. We just need to get through this. We just need to suffer live with the frustration, suffer the disappointment, whatever is called upon. Whatever is called for, is that's what we need to do. But if she has this exaggerated perception of the problem or the difficulty, if it were a reality, the degree to which it is bothersome to her would demand a response on my part.
Okay.
Do you see my problem?
Well, I think I do.
Okay.
What you're saying is that under normal circumstances, this issue, whatever it is, may seem like a 5 on the scale of 1 to 10. All of a sudden, when she's in this other place in the month, it becomes a 10.
Right.
You think it needs to be responded to at a 5, but she sees it as a 10.
Right.
What do we do?
Exactly.
Well, it probably really depends on the circumstances, of course, each thing being very different. But the one thing that we can ask from our husbands is that they listen to our perceptions. They listen to the 10 that we feel. And they're willing to not have to take steps, not have to solve the problem, not have to make it better for us, but just listen to how difficult it is for us right then. And that is the action that needs to be taken over and over and over again throughout our marriage, but particularly in this time. I don't want to be told it's no big deal. I might even know in some part of me that it really isn't a 10. But I have this raging surge of emotion that just has to get out. And if I'm able to get it out, if I'm able to say it, if I'm able to work with it without my husband trying to manage it or make it smaller, then I don't have as big of emotional need to work on it outside there. I'm thinking of another example in the context of my marriage. Very often, and I'm sad to say this, one of the ways that my emotions, my irrational emotions that end up looking like anger a lot, come out toward my children during this time. One of the things that my husband does is later, pulling me aside, later when we're together, not around the kids, talk to me about how I feel about what's going on there. Very often, though, when it's going on, unless it's too big to not talk about, he just lets it go. He probably knows that I'm just not going to be very rational at that time. And I'm not talking about being abusive to the kids. I'm talking about things like saying to them, you didn't take out the recycling, come and clean the kitchen, wait a minute, the bathroom's dirty. I will start giving them 20 different things to do at once. And my kids by now will say, Mom, I only can do one thing at a time. And I will then have to adjust some of my behavior. But if my husband is going to get in the middle of that and start saying, Christine, you're just being irrational. Don't tell the kids to do 20 things at once. It's not going to work very well. I am pretty worked up at that point. And although I think it would be responsible, I know it would be more responsible to get a grip of myself at that time, I think I know that it's far better for my husband to tell me later. So if you want to give me a specific example, I might be able to help you out more, but that's the best I can do at this point.
No, that's very helpful. What I understand you're saying then is the main thing a husband can do to be supportive is take his wife's perception of reality seriously, not dismiss it, not diminish it, not mock it, not trivialize it, but take it seriously. And that looks like listening respectfully, listening compassionately, trying to encourage her with respect to whatever the issue is, the problem that might be bothering her seemingly in your environment, to say, let's act on it later, let's decide later what to do. Maybe you'll feel better in a few days and we can
maybe you'll feel better in a few days is probably the wrong thing to say.
Okay, thank you.
Can we decide to make a decision about this in a few days?
Okay.
Might work.
Okay.
But those little words, maybe you'll feel better in a few days, probably not going to help you out very much.
About not liking on eggshells?
Well, a few. I really have to live in an understanding way here.
Right.
And as much as we can look back on ourselves and say, oh, man, I mean, every month I look back and say, oh, man, I wish that I hadn't been so irrational, or I wish that my moods wouldn't swing so much. The reality is I feel irrational. My moods really do swing. And it's hard for me to work with that. And I need to work with that. Again, Jack, I don't want to be sending out the message that I can be irresponsible because I feel different. Well, I need to be responsible in my feeling different. But it really comes at me as a mystery. I know that sounds kind of weird because it's been happening every month since I was an adolescent, but it hasn't stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
It has changed from month to month. The feelings could change severely. Not just I have a good month and then a bad month, but things come at me very differently each month. And so I'm working with a stranger to myself very often. Not a complete stranger, but somebody I don't know in my day-to-day life. And I don't like her very well. I don't know how to work with her. She's unruly. And I really like it when my husband is very much willing to listen and very soft toward me. Not trying to change it, not getting hard-fisted or lock-jawed, but being like an easy current, not a stiff piece of steel, but an easy current that will ride with me down this difficult time. I want him to listen to me. I want him to be gentle with me. I want him to understand that it's really difficult for me. And sometimes I just want to cry. And so if he's being real gentle, instead of me being hard toward him, because I feel, another thing is I feel like I'm a little bit more paranoid. Like people that I think love me and are with me, other times I don't feel as much like that. I don't feel as secure at that time. But if he's riding with me, if he's understanding me, then very often what I'll be able to do is just crumple up in his arms and cry. Because usually during that time of the month, I feel like crying, and I don't have a real reason why not. And if my husband was to say, look, Christine, life is pretty good, the sun's out, the kids are great, we're this and this and this are good in our life, it wouldn't help me at that time, because I just have these feelings, and these feelings need to be unlocked from inside of me, shared with another person, and they smooth out. Not completely, but it's very helpful to me.
Well, that's good. It's very helpful to hear you explain all that. It's much more subtle, but I think the reality is that masculine sexuality has its own versions of all of that. I can't begin to articulate it or explain it as well as you have. But I think a woman, as she gets to know her husband, will realize that there are real similar, comparable kinds of forces at work in a man because of his sexuality. If you look at literature, philosophers, literary people throughout human culture, you'll often run across a theme that men are really glad when they grow older and their sexual passions subside. They're not as strong. I think there's a comparable kind of reality there, that men feel very much a slave to their sexual desires and their sexual passions. And they'd be glad to be free of it. It's sort of comparable in that regard, that their physiology is a real issue in their life. And the way that, that works its way out in terms of anxiety and frustration and a kind of self-hatred and a self-loathing at times is a reality that they have to live with. And I think all that you said about Min understanding the way her sexuality is affecting her moods and her perception can be said in reverse. It's just not nearly as dramatic and therefore a lot harder to identify and put your finger on. But I think it's a reality.
And it's much more in men tied to their sexual response as opposed to the changes, the physiological changes
right.
in their body. I want to ask you more about that. I would like to make it more clear to women. You said it's very hard to describe, but I guess one of the things I can say to help women out, and maybe you can help me here, is that very, very often in counseling, and I think I've shared this before on the program, men share a very big difficulty with their sexuality, with fantasy, with excessive masturbation, with pornography, with looking at women, with being very aroused easily by seeing any kind of sexual stimuli, or things that might not even be a stimulus at all to women, might be very much to men. They might walk into a room and have no sexual urge at that time, and a woman walks in and it arouses them quickly. There's just a whole range of sexual responses that men find coming in their life, so to speak, and being very difficult for them to deal with. Men who want to be doing the right thing and yet are finding this other part of them coming out.
Now, I do think that that can be trained and channeled, and I think we've even talked about this in the past, that we really need to discipline ourselves to make proper choices and do the right thing, and in the process I think we can rechannel and retrain our responses and train ourselves as to what will and will not be stimulating to us. But what we do have to reckon with is that I think as God created men, as God created males, he created them to be particularly sensitive to visual stimuli and to be particularly interested in physical sexual intimacy, perhaps in a way that women are not. I mean, I'm not going to generalize. I can't speak to that issue. But I just know that that as a generalization, men are very, very interested in physical intimacy. And I think that becomes a real issue in marriage sometimes between men and women, because they seem to have a different
rhythm.
Need, if mm-hmm. you will, a different desire, a different strength of desire for that. And if women don't understand that men are different than they are, they will misinterpret that. It may seem perverse, bestial to them. But I think as God created men, it's a part of humanity. It's a part of the way God made one half of human beings to be. And granted, they can pervert that and they can abuse that, and it's a real problem to men to be righteous in the context of that desire that is raging within them. But the desire is something that God put there to be channeled, and it's not wrong, it's not inappropriate, it's just something men have to work with.
And so we can live with each other in an understanding way, putting these two issues kind of on an even keel. A woman has a very difficult time with her body's physiological and her emotional response and perceptions at certain times of the month. In the same way, a man has a very difficult time with his sexuality. Both of us are having to manage something that's very difficult for us, and we need to know that it's just different things that we need to manage. Jack, I see that our time for this program is over, and I'm really sad about that. I'm disappointed, because I would like very much to get more into this area of sexuality. It's a very important one. However, of course, we will be talking about this in a few weeks.
The McKinsey staff is dedicated to studying and understanding the Bible. Individually, they want to know what the biblical authors meant when they wrote the Bible. They want to peel away layers of false teaching and get to the very heart of the biblical message. And this is not easy. It's hard work. It requires years of dedication and the willingness to believe what the Bible actually says rather than what they might want it to say. These men and women also believe their studies and their teaching are not perfect. They know their understanding is limited, and they may be wrong, but they trust God to give them the eyes to clearly see His truth. They also encourage others to join them in their efforts, to ask them tough questions, to challenge their conclusions, and to take the Bible seriously. More importantly, they desire that all may come to the wonderful saving truth of the gospel. Much of the teaching done at McKenzie is available on tape and can be ordered from the tape catalog. Papers and the free monthly newsletter, News and Views, are also available. Information about how you can find out more about McKenzie Study Center and its ministries will be given at the end of today's program.
Our conversation today took a somewhat different turn than I had thought it would take. But Christine, it's been very, very helpful to me because I think a lot of men, they really are confounded. They're really confused when on this regular basis a whole different woman shows up and a woman that they are not accustomed to living with, all of a sudden they need to come to terms with, how do I relate to this other person? How do I relate to this new woman? And it's so difficult for a husband who has never experienced what his wife is experiencing. He's never had his perception of reality so completely taken over by other forces within himself. You know, he knows stress, he knows anxiety, he understands all that, but this inexplicable kind of force from within that alters the perception of reality, he's never really experienced that. And it does require him to stop and objectively look at reality and understand that even though he's never experienced it, there's something going on there that he has to accommodate, live with, understand, be compassionate toward, and respect. And it's been very helpful for you to talk about that.
Chuck, I'm glad it's been really helpful. As you said just a minute ago, we really didn't think about talking about this at all, but as you started in talking about sexual differences, it occurred to me that this is really a big one that doesn't get talked about. And I experienced myself as being kind of embarrassed, having a difficult time talking about it, because I usually don't talk about it. In fact, I'm ashamed of the fact that I act the way I do. I don't like the fact that this different woman invades my body, so to speak, and that's exactly what it feels like. There's this different woman there. I feel very ungrounded. I feel very much less secure in my emotions than I usually do. I don't like the feeling. I don't like that it happens to me. I wish it didn't. I push up against the fact that God gave that to me, and it's hard for me to say, okay, God, I'll accept this from you, because I really don't want it. However, I'm very much helped when my husband understands it with me, when I'm not alone in it. And he can come alongside me, not by being able to be in my body, but trying to take on the task of understanding, just as you have today. And hopefully this discussion, as difficult as it was for me to do, can be helpful to lots of men in walking alongside their wife in an understanding way.
I'm sure it will be.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry produced by McKenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about McKenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under McKenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. This information will be given again in just a few moments. The staff members of McKenzie believe their ministry is in constant need of God's mercy. They trust that God may use them for His purposes, and they hope their efforts will be valuable to others. They know that only in Christ can we truly have hope in this world. The McKenzie Study Center is also a non-profit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to McKenzie, it will be entirely tax-deductible. Just mail your check to McKenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to call and request a free taped copy of today's program, The telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now, on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of McKenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.